In today's episode, we're talking what it means to transform your pain into purpose and how not to let fear paralyze you with what's going on in your situation, but how to use that to propel you into a better, safer future for yourself. You're not going to want to miss this episode because we get to talk to a man who was in the military, came out, became homeless, overcame homelessness, ended up getting 3 degrees, and is living a very successful life and helping other people transform their pain into their purpose. Enjoy the show. Today on The Whole Person Mindset, I'm interviewing our featured guest today, Mike Bethune. Mike is a military veteran who overcame homelessness, depression, addiction, and suicidal thoughts. During the process, he discovered his life's purpose and meaning. He holds 3 degrees, all of which are connected to coaching and counseling. For over 25 years, Mike has been helping others to transform their lives from their pain of their life into the power and purpose and meaningful experiences to set people in momentum moving forward. He's accomplished this through life transformation coaching, counseling workshops, self-help books, and digital courses. Mike is a 3-time author and brings a unique perspective and approach to coaching, speaking, writing, and facilitating workshops. So today on The Whole Person Mindset, I want to bring to you Mike Bethune. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well, Evan. Doing well. Thanks a lot. Well, how are you this morning?
I am fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. I'm really glad that you are here.
Appreciate that. I'm honored to be on here.
You know, there's so many things right now going on in life, and there's a lot of hopelessness, a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, a lot of pain caused from fear, media. And one of the things that really stuck out to me about your bio is how to transform the hopelessness into purpose. And I want to ask you, in your own story, what led to you going into homelessness? And what are some of the lessons that you learned to get out of that mindset?
Sure.
And turn that into your purpose?
Sure. It's a great question. So I'm originally from New Jersey in the Northeast there, New Jersey, a few miles away from New York, and grew up there in a great family. But a family that didn't have a whole lot. So I opted for the military. I was a pretty good athlete in high school, but I didn't get scholarships I thought I was going to get. I opted for the military. And my second year in, I was deployed into a hostile environment, life-threatening environment, on the border of Nicaragua. We're talking, there was a coup that happened in Nicaragua. A group called the Sandinistan Rebels overtook Nicaragua, and they were coming for Honduras. Honduras is American interest, so our president wasn't having it at all. We're talking in the mid-80s now, so that was President Reagan. He sent us in. I went with the first wave of troops to handle that situation there. And, you know, in that kind of environment, we're talking Central America. It's lush jungle out there, so it was more covert jungle-type operation. And there's no reference point for the psychological damage that can happen to you out there. It's even less about the physical things that happen, but more about the mindset. Like your podcast talks about mindset. It's more about the mindset out there in terms of how you even keep your mind stable in that environment. You know, just not knowing what's going to happen from one minute to the next. And so even in that environment, I learned how to, this wasn't a part of my life prior to that, but I learned how to anesthetize myself with substances. I mean, unfortunately, that's what people do, right, in life, whether it's in military environment or it's in civilian environment. When pain overwhelms you, people look for a way to numb the pain of the reality. And that's an unfortunate reality that we live with. And I ended up with an addiction coming out of that 6-month hostile environment and came back. I was still in the military, had to get counseling. Dealt with depression, dealt with PTSD, and ended up as a young homeless veteran back in my hometown. Now, I had places to go. I had places to go. I had a loving family, but with the craziness that was going on in my head that I couldn't categorize and didn't really understand what was happening with me, I didn't want to bring that. I did my best to try not to bring that around my family and those that I loved. And so I became just this nomad, if you will, using my military experiences to take care of myself and survive and live off the land. So I had a double whammy going on. I had mental illness going on and I had addiction going on. And I thought that that's how, I didn't think I would see 21, 22, 23 years old. I thought that that's how it was going to end for me. Fortunately, to your question, somebody recommended that I go into a place. I've always been a person who believed in God and knew that even in the craziness that I went through, I was brought out for a purpose, because not everybody came out like I came out. Although I came out with psychological trauma, I still came out in one piece and still had potential to do better, for life to be better. And I attributed that to God bringing me out, and there's still a purpose attached to my life. I've always believed that. And so somebody recommended that I go to this place because they dealt with faith and clinical counseling, the combination of the two. And that's exactly what I needed and what I was looking for. And my life changed in that place. I met a man, I'll summarize it here. I met a man by the name of Reverend Dr. Solomon J. Thibodeau. He was a gentleman from India. He was a pastor, but he was also a top-notch clinical counselor. And so he had that combination there. And he worked with me, and he saw in me things I didn't see in myself, because in the midst of my bondage, I couldn't see anything except darkness and except trauma. I didn't see the light of day, but he saw. And he said to me one day in our counseling session, he said, "Mike, you have a lot of potential, and the men around here, they follow you. People listen to what you say, and you have leadership capabilities," he said, "but you'll never get to it until you get over the fear of who you can be." And he made this statement. This was the statement that unlocked it all for me. He said, "When the pain of where you are is greater or stronger than the fear of where you have the potential to go, then you'll move." And he explained to me how pain and fear were both dual motivators. They either paralyze our lives or they propel us. And it's all based on our perception. And that day I made a decision to take my power back. You know, it was a mindset shift, a paradigm mindset shift based on his counseling to me. And I started saying, you know what, I'm not going to die like this. I'm going to go for it. There's still a whole lot of life to live. And there's a whole lot more to me than can be defined by the current predicament that I was in. So I went to school. He took me on as a mentee. And he poured himself into me. I'm telling you, God used that man to change my life. He poured himself into me. I wanted to be more like him. And I started to realize that my pain had kind of laid the platform that was now propelling me into my life's purpose. And I went to school, and over 3 years, I was able to earn 3 degrees, all in a counseling space. And for the last 25 years now, I've been counseling people, biblical counseling, life coaching, everything to do with helping people have a mindset shift, a paradigm shift in their mind, because life happens to everybody. You plan for life and then life happens. So it's less about what happens, because stuff will happen, but it's more about how we're going to respond to it once it happens. And I put it all together here in this book. This is my most recent book. I've written 3. This is the most recent one. This summarizes my life and all that I've been trying to teach people. This is my life's mission right here, to show people that, as you said, people, the world is in pain right now. And, you know, pain, you have to deal with pain or else it will deal with us. And pain goes underground, but not away. It has to be processed. And so that book, How to Transform Your Pain into Purpose, is what I know how to do. That's the horse that I ride. And that's what I've taught people over and over again, that when life happens to you, you have the initial impact, and in the pain of it, our experiences paralyze us temporarily until we have a mindset shift. And then we start seeing it as not just happening to us, but maybe it could have even happened for us. And we take the power out of that painful experience and start making it work for us and push us into our life's purpose. So I digress on that note, but that's, in a nutshell, that's who I am, what I do, and how I got to this point here.
Yeah, no worries. You know, what really, as I was thinking about what you were saying, what I'm thinking at is for someone who's deathly afraid of COVID or is struggling with fear, anxiety attacks, of other things in their current life, and you know, they're not so much afraid of their potential, mm-hmm. but they're just afraid of what their present is. What are some things that a person can do today to overcome some of those struggles?
In terms of overcoming some of their fears?
Fears, anxieties, yeah.
Well, I think that media overload, right? Sensory overload is one of the main things that's driving anxiety today. You know, we got all the bells and whistles, and, you know, with all the blessings of technology also come the curses and the bondage of technology too, if it's misused. And so we, you know, we sensory overload, you know, back up from some of those things, back up from, look at the ones that you have to take the information that you need, you know, to make it through the day, like the pertinent information. But some of the other things that we just take into our psyche, it's that stuff. It's kind of, it's who you're listening to and what you're listening to. Right. And as a person thinks, so they are. And so we have all these talking heads from TV, from media, from everything, and all this information, a lot of that stuff, you take in too much of that, you know, into your diet, and that's enough to cause fear. That's enough to start, whether it's real or not, you hear it enough and you start to believe something. So that would be the first thing I would say, evaluate what you're allowing into your psyche and what you're digesting into your spirit, because that will dictate whether you have peace on the inside or whether it is that you're already always anxiety riddled. That would be the first thing.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
No, hold that thought, because I want to go a little bit further here too. Mm-hmm. Like, not only is it the outside influences and what we're hearing, when you talk about sensory overload, I've really been thinking about how much screen time affects me personally, you know, because right around 5 o'clock every day, I'll start to get a little anxious. And the only thing I can think about, like, man, I've been on like the computer and using my phone and using all these digital things all day, and now I just feel anxious. And so I'm wondering if just screen time in and of itself causes anxiety. I'm sure there's clinical studies that we could do research on and go find. But I really think how you said sensory overload by seeing so many different things, it's just too much.
Sure. I agree with that 100%. And also what comes with that, you know, with hours and hours on end of screen time, right, in this whole digital world, it keeps people from also the blessing and the calmness that comes with real social interaction, right? We're not interacting with other human beings. There's something that mellows us out and that gives us a certain level of confidence and encouragement also just when we're in the presence of other people that are good for us.
Right. And I think you hit the nail on the head, not just present with other people, but I think just the mindset of being present. Because when we're constantly on digital things, our presence, our mindset is elsewhere.
Sure.
Learning how to be present where we're at versus at a different place digitally keeps us grounded. I don't know. Like I'm not saying this is an answer. These are ideas that are coming into my head as we're talking.
No, that's definitely spot on, because being present, being here in the moment, like right now, I have to listen. I have to be intentional about not just hearing, but listening to everything you're saying so that I can respond accurately, you know, and give accurate feedback. And you have to do the same. We're both now present in the moment. But in the world that we live in right now, unfortunately, that's not the norm. You know, people are physically present, but most people are not intentionally present because we're so preoccupied with all the gadgets. And literally we have bells and whistles going off all day, reminding us of this and reminding us of that. And it can become so monotonous after a while that we miss we miss a whole lot of living, and we'll be existing, but we miss a whole lot of living because of the technology is great, but if it's misused or mishandled or not handled with boundaries, it can really take us to some bad places.
Now, I did interrupt you, so if you still have that train of thought, go ahead and finish it.
In terms of?
Well, you're going getting ready to hit a second point, and then I was like, well, wait, let's park here real quick and dive into this.
Yeah. I just think that with fear, right? Fear is a dual motivator. It will either paralyze us or propel us. So you ask the question, why are some people, why we all get fearful in different ways, but why is it that fear drives some people to do better or motivate them to do better? And why does it paralyze other people? I have an illustration for you if I can use it real quick. Okay. So literally this is true facts. In the African jungle, I have friends that live out there that are from there. Well, used to, they're raised up out there. But they told me that when the male lion gets older and he can't hunt the way he used to, and the females do most of the hunting anyway, but the male lion usually comes along and finishes off the deal, right? He uses that power and assertiveness. But when he's not able to do that anymore, he's old and he's frail, he changes his mindset. He changes his thinking strategy because he still has to eat or else he's going to die. So he changes how he's going to work. And what he does is now he taps into a whole nother power that he has. He can't run, he can't jump, he can't do all that powerful stuff, but he still has the power of his roar. And when the male lion roars, that roar comes from way down in the belly. And when he roars, it reverberates over 3 miles, literally a 3 mile radius over the course of that space. And every animal, prey within the context of that 3 miles, hears that roar. They all hear it, but they react differently to it. And literally some of them hear it, gazelles, other animals hear it, and the fear, they get fearful, but their fear is a positive fear. It works for them, and they run in the opposite direction and they hightail it, and they don't have to worry about being the meal for that day. Other animals hear it, and usually smaller animals hear it, the same roar, and they literally get stuck in their tracks, stuck, paralyzed by fear. And that old lion just walks the distance of that 3 mile course and just plucks meals. They're sitting there waiting for them because those animals got paralyzed. So they all heard the same thing, but some got stuck by it and some were propelled to go forward. So life is the same way. It's just about how we hear things and how we perceive things, which is critical as it relates to who and what we're allowing into our psyches.
So how do we learn how to change our perception? Because, you know, you have one animal that ran, mm-hmm. and then you had the one that got paralyzed. So if right. I'm a person that would crumble, how do I change my perception so that I no longer respond that way?
Well, it probably would be wise for the animal that gets paralyzed or the person that gets paralyzed to spend some time. Maybe they need to change who's in their circle, right? We're usually a representation of the main five or six people that are in our circle. So maybe sometimes it might be reevaluating who's in our circle, because if you got a whole circle of people that get paralyzed by the same thing, well, there's a good chance you're going to be there for quite some time. But if you begin to have a conversation with the people who get motivated by fear, what is it that drives them? You're hearing the same thing. Why are the responses different? And then sometimes there's those, so there's the enemy, external, E-N-E-M-Y, but then there's the inner me, right? Those voices that I've grown up with, that still might be reverberating and resonating in my mind from time to time, that tells me that I can't do this and I can't do that. That stuff is paralyzing in and of itself as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, you talk about how to transform your pain into purpose all throughout the US. What are some steps that a person can take to do just that?
Sure. Well, I will go right to the source here because I've written this out in steps, in stages, so that people, in layman's terms too, there's not a whole lot of clinical jargon in here. I want people to really, you know, to really be able to get it. But the first, say again?
You want it to relate.
Absolutely. So the first stage in the book is addressing the fear. The fear has to be addressed, right? People are in pain and in different kinds of pain. And a lot of people are in so much pain, especially leaders, in so much pain that you suffer in silence for a long time because everybody still counts on you. And so you don't even tell people the exact nature of your pain. I talk about in the book how, you know, we smile in public, you know, to save face and keep up with the Joneses and all, but suffer in private. And so the first step is to address the fear. We just talked a little bit about fear. And then the second stage is to acknowledge the pain, to acknowledge it. It can't even be dealt with until it's acknowledged, you know, and maybe you might need to talk to a therapist, or maybe you might need to talk to your pastor, or somebody that's there and that's capable of walking you through some of those stages and helping you process the pain. Because unprocessed pain of any kind, it goes underground internally. It goes down on the inside, but it never goes away. You know, and in the clinical world, we talk about triggers. Right. You may have an unresolved issue that went underground and you still may be able to function in life and have some level of success. But that thing is still down there and it's just got a whole bunch of layers of life on it. But it's gone underground, but it hasn't gone away. And given the right circumstances, it could come bubbling to the top. And all that pain that hasn't been dealt with now comes out in a huge uncontrolled catharsis that gets projected upon people who didn't even cause it in the beginning.
How do we go about finding what those triggers are?
How do you go about finding what the triggers are that could set off the pain? Well, I mean, the way triggers work is
they happen.
You don't even see them. You don't even see them as triggers until it's too late, almost, to a certain extent, right? As you work with processing the pain, you don't have to worry about having to deal with the triggers down the road. But usually the way triggers happens, it's an implosion, kind of on the spot implosion. And by that time, I mean, the horse is pretty much out the gate and up the road. It's the key is to address the fear in the beginning and to begin to acknowledge the pain and get some help with processing the pain. And then the third stage, and I won't go through all 10, but the third stage is to abandon all excuses. Because if we make excuses long enough for whatever pain we're in, whatever fear we're dealing with, we make excuses long enough, whether you caused it, whether I caused it, whether we cause our own pain, whether somebody else caused us pain, whether it's external stimuli from the craziness of the world causing us pain and causing us fear, we have to abandon all excuses in order to get to the exact nature of the issue. Have to abandon it. All excuses are good for is perpetuating the pain and keeping us stuck in a particular situation. And, you know, they just keep us locked in right there. Excuses are good for nothing except short-circuiting our true God-given potential. That's what that does. I'm speaking from personal experience. I mean, you know, you talk about this happening, that happening, whatever, Republican, Democrat, whatever your thing is, whatever horse you ride. I mean, sometimes those excuses end up short circuiting our true ability to be who we have the potential to be.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So those are some of the things, just a couple of things that I talk about in the book, but I walk through all 10 stages. These are things that I've had to literally work through, that Dr. Solomon, who I mentioned early on, my mentor, walked me through and showed me how to process. So I'm speaking in layman's terms, but I'm working through each stage in a very thorough way. So if anybody is really serious about transforming pain, for instance, I'm here on this podcast talking about this only because one day I made a decision to say, I'm not going to be the victim. You know, I'm a victor here. And everything that's happened to me, you know what? It's given me a strength and a resiliency that I didn't even know I had before I went through it. So now what am I going to do with it? Well, I've chosen to empower other people and help other people make the mental paradigm shift that life happens to everybody, but it's less about what happens to you and more about how you respond to what happens to you when it happens.
Mike, thanks so much for coming on today. You know, I like to end the show with the same three questions.
Sure.
I'm going to ask them to you, okay?
Sure.
In terms of negative self-talk, what do you currently struggle with?
Negative self-talk. Man, that's a great question. Negative self-talk. My pause is not because I don't have any. It's because I'm contemplating what I want.
Which one to choose?
Well, yeah, exactly. We all deal with that. I can get in my head all the time. Not all the time. I can get in my head sometime and talk myself out of negative self-talk. You know, I try not to practice self-talk, and that's what I negative self-talk. But I know that it happens. Wow, that's a tough one because I haven't had to think about that in a long time. I'll tell you, the best I can do right now to that question is how I used to talk and how I had to make a shift in that. And I used to tell myself that I wasn't good enough to, to go for another level, whatever the next level in life is for me. You know, maybe this is it. Maybe I should just go ahead and settle and be content with here I am, with where I am. And though I used to talk like that a lot, you know, maybe this is it. Maybe I should just go and be, and not to minimize anybody's career or anything like that, but maybe I should just settle for working a regular job and this, that. I used to talk like that, but then who I really am on the inside wouldn't let me live with that, you know, because I knew there was more to me. And I say this humbly, but I'm a fish in water when I'm pouring into other people. It's like, you know, whatever human healing, the way the process works is that whatever brokenness I have, my perpetual healing happens as I help to become a healing agent in other people's lives and serving, right? To serve and help other people. So I don't know. I don't know if I got at the exact nature of your question, but that's the best I can get at right now because I do my best not to practice negative self-talk.
No worries. Well, I don't think any of us want to practice it. It's just sometimes what happens.
It does. It bubbles up, but I can't think of anything in particular right now.
What brings you peace?
Oh, man. Prayer, meditation, the love of family and friends, relatives, friends. I mean, just real loving human interaction. Quietness. I have no problem. I'm not an introvert of sorts, but I have no problem withdrawing, right? In the same way that Jesus did, withdrawing from the crowd and spending time alone with God and with my own soul. I'm totally content with that. And I'm really at peace, you know, in that place. I guess the biggest thing that brings me peace is knowing that I'm doing my best to walk in the purpose and some people use the term calling, but my life's true purpose and meaning, you know, really making a difference, not just taking up space on this earth, but making a difference. That right. Brings me peace in knowing that.
What's the greatest decision you've ever made?
To believe that God was working through people that were there to help me when I was a homeless military vet and I was ready to give up on life and find a way to commit suicide or something. I'm grateful every day that day never came. And I know that God is all involved in that, God using people. So that's definitely the greatest decision that I've ever made, but it wasn't just my decision alone. It was God using people to influence me to realize that life is worth living. And there's a whole lot more on the other side of that pain that I was in.
So good. Where can people find you if they want to connect with you after this?
Sure. They can go right to my website. It's MikeBethune.com. My name is up on the screen there, MikeBethune.com. And then the same on all social media platforms, LinkedIn, Facebook, and all, MikeBethune.com.
B-E-T-H-U-N-E, Bethune.
That's correct, Bethune.
Awesome.
Bethune. When I was in the military, they say platoon. No, not platoon, it's Bethune.
Mike, thank you so much for coming on today. Have a great day.
Hey, Evan, thank you so much, man. You do the same. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay, you too.